Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Gregory, and you are listening to the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. This is a time that we're going to spend discussing spiritual truths, issues related to healing, and anything else that's on your mind. But let me just spend a moment, if I may, reminding some and introducing others to the sponsors of this program. That's the Light Giver International Association, which I'm the chair and founder, and also the Universal Healer Organization, of which I also am the founder. So what I'd like to do also is open up my chat window. There we go. The chat window is now open so that anyone who wants simply to listen and perhaps to send me an instant message can do it as well. Now, there may be some of you who are listening who have not had the opportunity to visit the Light Giver webpage. Now, you can visit that simply by typing in www.lightgiver.com. Lightgivers, actually with an S, LightGivers .org. So you visit that website, and what you'll see is a word that's probably unfamiliar to you and unfamiliar to most. The word is sourcination. And there's probably only one other word in the English language that resembles that word, and that word is vaccination. Now, if you are vaccinated, what happens? What happens is that your entire immune system mobilizes to eliminate, if not suppress, some illness or disease that's growing within your body. So the word sourcination reflects or identifies the injection of Holy Spirit, Holy Ghost, Chi, whatever it is that you want to call it, into your spiritual body with the intention to eliminate any dark energy or negative energy that's there. So that's what sourcination is, and that's what you will be exposed to when you go to that website. Now, most of the time when you go to a website that has some spiritual or healing intent, your job and objective is to read and review all of the words, hoping that by consuming those words, by reviewing them, that somehow you will become more awake and aware. Nothing can be farther from the truth. When you get on the website, nothing could be farther from the truth when you get on the Lightgivers, with an S, .org website. You're not expected to digest the words. What you're expected to do is surrender yourself to the possibility that that website is vested with extra amounts, I'll say, of spirit and uplifting energy, which is designed to do three things. The first thing the website is designed to do is to remove, to the extent that you will allow it, any and all dark energies and spiritual blockages in your auric field. Now, your auric field represents the energies that you're holding at the physical level, at the astral, or we'll say emotional level, at the memory, or we'll say the causal level, at the mental level, and even the subconscious. So just think about it. Here's a website which is allegedly vested with energy that's able to clear, to the extent that's necessary, to clear your lower bodies of sufficient or enough spiritual blockages to allow you to experience the next level of what's embedded in that website. What else is embedded in that website? What's embedded in that website is energies to clear your attachment soul or soul awareness, and to align you by so doing it with even a higher aspect of yourself. So what is it designed to do? One, it's designed, the energies there are designed to expand to the fullest extent possible your capacity to receive God energy. And more importantly, your capacity to give God energy or soul energy to others. So it's opening up. Second thing that it's designed to do is to integrate you fully and completely with your spiritual purpose. So you can routinely expect, once you get onto that website, then to notice a centering of your consciousness and awareness and a greater clarity of yourself as you're going about in daily life. The third thing that you can actually expect as you get on that website is that to notice that you become completely one with divine will, so that assuming that you are able to relax your mental attachments, hang-ups and so forth, just to relax, surrender to your divine self, that what you'll notice is that your purpose in life seems much clearer and a greater expression of your own personal divinity. The last thing that also occurs is a reduction in the influence or intrusion of past life activities, attitudes, and experience into your daily life. And let me recast that. To the extent that there are spiritual blockages that are in your awareness that are directly coming from either things in your past in this lifetime or previous lifetime, to that extent, they will be reduced if not eliminated. Now, it's taken me probably about 4 or 5 minutes to lay all this out for you. Friends, it is designed to be instant. So even though my description of it was fairly linear, A plus B equals C, it's designed to occur simultaneously. Now, the thing that is absolutely phenomenal about that, as far as I'm concerned, what's absolutely phenomenal about that is that what occurs to you or for you instantly when you get on that website is what took me back when I really maintained a universal healer practice would take 3 or 4 hours to bring a person to that point. Now, the difference was that when we did the universal healer work in the old days, we would go through and work minutely and in a very finite fashion on every single aspect of your body. So what would happen is, one, we would scan, let's just take, for example, we'd scan your liver, and we would determine the extent to which it was filled with contaminated energy. Then we would ask your higher self to remove the contaminated energy. And then secondly, what we would do, would check to see if that particular organ, say your kidney, was functioning at 100% of its potential. And once we did that, then we'd find out if it was receiving 100% of the energies that it was required to receive. Now, what that was calibrated after we did that. Then what we would do is ask that all that energy be installed. Then we would go back and check to ensure that it was receiving all of that energy and that it was still, that it was operating still at 100%. Now, can you imagine just how tedious that process was? So we would go through the brain, through the eyes, through the ears, through the every single body chakra. So that would be the crown, the forehead, the third eye, the throat, the heart, the navel, the secondary navel, the sex chakra, the one also which relates, that's behind the navel and the back, which is concerned with blood pressure. Then we would check all the lungs, and we would check the blood, and we would check the lymph system, and we would check the eliminative system. So the entire body would be completely scanned. The bones, the spine, the entire body system would be scanned, and we would go through it in a very detailed and finite way. So that was the full-blown Universal Healer Program. Now what we're concerned with the Lightgiver Program, is simply removing spiritual blockages enough that you're able to even more clearly understand and identify with your higher self. Now, once all that's done, what's the third phase? The third phase is ascension. And I know I've promised to talk about ascension more and more in each show, and I'll probably do that on this one. So what ascension is concerned with is the recentering of the focus of one's action and attention in a higher state of awareness. I'm calling it a higher state of awareness because it is different from what could be called a lower state. Now, the lower state of awareness is the state of awareness where you or I as the individual feel trapped by life's circumstances, feel the need to react to any kinds of disagreements or threats that we perceive in our environment, feel the need to control or to be controlled. That's the lower world. Now, some contexts, they talk about the world of cause and effect. It's as if we as individuals are like ping pong balls, or better yet, the balls on the tables in the arcade, you know, that go back and forth and back and forth and bing, 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 bing in all these different directions. But a lot of people, think of some of the people that you may know, live their lives that way, where they're just going and reacting from one thing to the other and one person to the other. And you talk to them, and the next thing you know, you're being treated to this long list of all these reactions that they're having to other folks. And it's like their life is out of control, or it's under the control of external influences. Well, that's what is described, as I say, in some works as the lower world, where the individual is so trapped in day-to-day circumstances that they lose sight of the fact there is an eternal state of consciousness in which they can enter and experience. So what I want to do now is spend a few moments talking to you a bit about ascension, and I apologize because I've promised to do that every show. In fact, I think that's even in the description of this program. Let me just take a moment and shift and share with you content related to ascension. The human being lives an existence in which he becomes aware of the possibility of experiencing himself as a mortal and hearing and quite possibly experiencing himself. And he's told that this is so, that he can live as an immortal or live in the immortal consciousness. Now, as a human being, his awareness of life is primarily focused on the world outside of him. It's a world of external senses and impressions, a world in which he defines himself solely and basically as a function of the impressions that are registered upon his senses. So So this occurs largely because the individual is vested with what could be called external sensory apparatus. On the other hand, the individual also has an internal sensory awareness, quite often reflected as the unconscious nervous system. But it's through the internal sensory awareness that we come to understand the nature of what it is to be a spiritual being. So the challenge to everyone is to avoid being overcome by the external senses, but instead to develop an awareness of the internal senses, the internal world. And in developing that awareness, the greater the possibility exists to experience ourselves in an expanded capability, in an expanded capacity, and to enter what could be called the ascended state. So the implication of the ascended state is that one is outside of this traditional mortal world. Now, why would someone want to be ascended? What is it that is even attractive about ascension? What is attractive, I will say, is the tremendous sense of freedom that one has, that one is no longer at the mercy of external circumstances. Now, this does not mean that external circumstances do not occur. Certainly, if you walk out into the rain without the umbrella, you will get wet. But it's possible for you to get wet and merely say, "Oh, I'm wet," as opposed to, "Doggone it, I'm wet. I forgot my umbrella," or "My wife has my umbrella. How could that happen?" When one operates in that state, they're operating in the world of cause and effect. But if one goes out and says, "Oh my, it's raining. Next time I'll remember to bring the umbrella," that person is operating in a state of freedom. And that's what the ascended state offers. And I'm not saying the ascended state offers the opportunity to go out in the rain without your umbrella. What it offers is the opportunity to live a life in which you are in the world and not of it. But let's sharpen the focus a bit. I've mentioned before on other shows that state of awareness, initially, the ascended state of awareness, has different names in different cultures. For example, I believe Satori represents Japanese, then there's Nirvana, which is the Hindu tradition, and then there is, of course, the Kingdom of Heaven, which is more the Christian tradition. There's the Soul Plane and Ekankar, and you can go on and on identifying the names that are given in each of these traditions to the state where spiritual freedom is first experienced. Now, in the consciousness of being ascended, or as a person who has experienced ascension, you will notice not only a tremendous sense of freedom, but what you also notice is that you are unbounded, that your awareness becomes more likely one of being infinite, that a greater affinity with Creator God is felt, and there is a centering not only of your beingness, but of your attention on this expanded state, to the point that the other states of existence, although they are there and they may be experienced, these other states no longer become relevant. Now, what is not clear to many people is that one, they experience ascension sometimes moment by moment. So when you and I are walking on the beach and we look out and see this beautiful sunset, and you feel, or I feel, such affinity and love of nature and of God and so forth. In that moment, we are experiencing an ascended state. Or when you're sitting in meditation and you take those few breaths and you make that shift and you notice that suddenly you are completely unbounded and in that moment you're completely free, you're experiencing ascension. Or perhaps you're looking in the face of your beloved, or you're thinking about your beloved. Perhaps you're on a highway going through New Jersey, going through Delaware, going across, coming out from Long Island, going across Staten Island, coming down the Jersey Turnpike, coming down to Delaware, and you're thinking of your beloved. In that moment, you're experiencing ascension. Now, what is the challenge? The challenge is that most people cannot sustain that state. And for most people, entering it is random. It seldom is it intentional. As a matter of fact, its intentionality is almost a contradiction. Now, having said that, what I also want to go a step further and say the following. What is not clear is that most people, just like I'm doing, we'll talk about the glories of the ascended state. But very few people are privileged enough to sit with or be in the presence of someone who can support their ascension. Now, how does the support of ascension occur? Now, the first thing, it's an automatic thing on the lightgivers.org website, that if you've reached a point in your spiritual life where most of, if not all of, your spiritual blockages you've been able to move past, or you've asked your higher self, God or Jesus, to remove those, and you've gone as far as you can go, then you are a candidate then to experience ascension. And the lightgivers.org website will support you making that movement. But if that's not the case, then what occurs is you need to be fortunate enough to come in the presence of an individual who's been endowed by the archangels, the higher beings, endowed with the capacity to support ascension. And what occurs is, simply by almost the power of a thought, they're able to work with your higher self, or just sent, you might say, a telepathic request, or you can make a verbal request to your higher self to remove or eliminate any boundaries between your awareness of yourself as a human being and your awareness of yourself, you might say, in a higher state. Now, once that occurs, then what you'll notice is it's tantamount to a shift. In Eckhart, they call it soul travel, way of truth. I think it's universal soul movement. Well, nothing is moving and nothing is traveling. Your awareness simply expands. And you're able to, in that moment, to choose a different perspective from which to view yourself and life as a whole. So having chosen a different perspective, one imagines that there must be some kind of movement. But just imagine if your awareness were just like a balloon. Say your awareness is a balloon, or just see it perhaps as a large volleyball. So the whole volleyball is your awareness. And the only thing that gives you a different perspective is simply to look at life, or to look at what's going on, from a different point on that balloon. But it's the same balloon, and your awareness is the same. It's a bit larger. So all that's happening is you're shifting your attention and looking at life from a different perspective, or looking at yourself from a different perspective. So once that shift, that intentionality is supported to shift your perspective, then it's incumbent upon you to maintain the kind of exercises and activities which you've learned and that you've done that down through the ages that support your spirituality. Now let's do a little experiment right now. What I'd like for the people on this call, or perhaps listening to it in the archives, is take a moment and ask your higher self to cancel any and all contracts which may be interfering with your spiritual progress, to cancel any and all beliefs that may be interfering with your spiritual progress, to cancel any and all beliefs that create inhibiting beliefs that interfere with your spiritual progress, to disconnect you from anyone or person that's not of light and love, to remove from your aura, inside and outside, any and all thought forms, entities, beings that also are interfering with your spirit progress. And lastly, to remove and to cancel from your energy field any and all recollections, memories, or energies from this lifetime or previous lifetimes that may be interfering with your spiritual progress. Take a breath. And now, simply ask your higher self to allow you to experience soul ascension. So that basically is what I've shared with you largely during these 15 minutes or so are the key elements of the Light Giver program that has been given us by the group called the Light Givers, who are a group of angels and archangels who prefer to remain anonymous. Why are they anonymous? Because the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And by that I mean that you will appreciate your own experience with Source Nation, your own experiences with Ascension, if you're doing it because you're willing to experiment to see what results or positive effects you might have. As opposed to saying it, well, this archangel, that archangel wrote it, so it must be true. No, no. Truth is something that you're able to determine based on your direct experience with it. Truth is not out there. Truth is in here. And we all don't necessarily have the same truth, but we may find ourselves having similar variations. So I see that we have at least one person who's on the call, and I want to honor her. I think it's my friend Susan.
Hi, Gregory.
Hello there, Susan. How are you doing? Thanks for hanging out with us on Sunday. You made it almost to the end.
I enjoyed it.
Well, I just appreciate your being one of our loyal listeners. So that's terrific.
Well, thank you.
And I just thought I'd start to talk, show off with a little chat and give you a chance. Hang on just one second, Susan. I'm always picking on you, so let me see if I can pick on somebody else for a moment. Hello, caller coming from 972. If you want to chat, this is Gregory. Have a question or comment.
Oh, hi, Gregory. I just dialed in to listen to you. This is Audrey in Texas.
Oh, okay. So how are things going down there in Texas, Audrey?
Well, we've had a sad event happen, a loss of a pet. And so there's a lot of sadness surrounding it right now.
Now, did you say something happened to your cat?
Yes. It was my boyfriend's cat,
mm-hmm.
and he was really had a strong bond with the cat, and the cat was put down without him knowing about it.
Oh, that's a shame. So you both are sort of in a grieving state now, huh?
We're both pretty shocked about it.
Yeah, well, it's good that he has you at least to be his, share his concern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're mainly feeling it in your heart. Is that where it is? It feels a little heavy.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know how I love to do visualizations, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so let's do it. Now, did you have much of a contact with the cat at all?
Oh, yeah, we just saw it Saturday, and that's what we feel betrayed as well, because we were just there and there was no mention that she had plans to put him out. So it was done in a way that was dishonest without telling us that there was intent to do that, because we would have prevented it. We would have taken the cat, because the cat was at his mother's farm. You know, and but the cat, she knew very well, had a bond, and it was really David's cat. So I've had to deal with David and all his tears and sadness, and we've both been really difficult every day this week. It's been hard. The cat was put down on Monday, and you know, it's been difficult just to even work.
So are you sitting down now?
No, I'm standing up, but okay. I can sit down.
Yeah, why don't you sit down on the lap? Because you have to realize that the cat, even though it's put down, and certainly the sense of betrayal is there, but the cat's presence is still very much with you. Do you feel it?
Yeah.
Here's
mm-hmm.
what I want you to do: is just notice that it's almost like the cat is on your lap.
Uh-huh.
And you might feel that. And what you want to do is, even though, you know, there's a great sense of betrayal, you do yourself a disservice if you don't let that feeling of love that you have flow. So
mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask you to do is just imagine you have the cat on your lap,
mm-hmm.
and that you're, however you caressed it before, that you're rubbing. You might even do that with your hands. You know,
mm-hmm.
like the cat is there, and
mm-hmm.
then let that love. You might even you may notice you're starting to hear the cat purring, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you want to do, and tell the cat how much you love him, and that you're going to miss it. Is it a male or female?
Male, and his name is Rowdy.
Yeah.
Rowdy.
So just tell him, you know, talk to him, because even though his physical body has stopped, you know. That the cat being is still very alive, and
yeah.
and needs not to feel a sense of loss from you, which is a little confusing because of all the love that you gave him while he was around. So he really needs your love now.
Yeah.
Can you feel the difference?
Yeah, it is a difference for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep giving the cat the love.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that. I mean, I have been talking to Rowdy Spirit and lighting a candle for him and talking about him. I mean, it's really David's cat, so he was more, you know, close. The cat would be more with him, but I did, you know, get to pet it once in a while. But it was always like super glued. Rowdy was just always on David, you know. He loved David so much. And, I mean, yes, the cat was 15. The cat had a little bit of an injury on the paw, but it wasn't time to go, in our opinion. And that's what really is devastating for us right now in the physical, you know, to lose Rowdy physically like that.
Yeah,
but
so you just keep that love bond going.
Yeah.
Keep giving it the love. And the other thing, too, is perfectly normal, which a lot of people sometimes will ignore, is that when you have a close attachment to an animal or a person, that when that breaks, it's like ripping a part of your body out. It's like tearing off a limb, you know, and so it's perfectly normal for both of you to feel that sense of grief and just let it run its course.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen David like this ever. I mean, he's gone through everything from anger, rage to tears and all the different emotions, you know. It's hard for me because I feel his pain. I feel it. I feel the sadness from him.
Uh-huh.
You know, so sad. And he's just still in shock. And I mean, we're both in shock that it was even done. That it was even done. And it's now where we don't even want to talk to who did it at the moment.
I can understand that.
Disconnection. Like, how in the world could someone be so cruel to an animal and to their own son, the animal? That's so hurtful. It's a lot of different dynamics wrapped up into one about this cat.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it sounds like it gives an interesting opportunity to look at the entire relationship.
I'm
glad you called, and you know, my heart goes out to you and David, and giving my good wishes. And
thank you. Really appreciate it.
And I'm glad you called.
I will teach what you shared to me to David, if I can get him to be open about it.
If he will, it may be a couple of days.
He doesn't really want to.
Well, I think the sense of betrayal right now is really overwhelming. Is the main thing.
Yeah,
that's the main thing. So he's
in disbelief and shock and everything wrapped up.
And it's another opportunity for you to do that blessing work.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, do a lot of blessing work.
Bless.
That'll help you both.
Bless everyone.
And also bless the person that did this. Very important.
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
Great. Look, I'm glad you called in, and I'm going to let you...
I'll listen to the rest of your wonderful show, and I bless you.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye now. Okay, Susan?
Yes.
We're back to you. What words of wisdom do you have for us today? Did you do the... Did you get a chance to look at the lightgivers.org website? Because I thought this time I was...
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and I just thought it would be deep this time to walk through the exercises so that if there were any new people who heard the archives, that they at least would understand what the drill was.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's the thing. So many times when we master spiritual techniques, and I'm not talking to other people, I'm talking about myself, that I'll forget how important it is to repeat the request for the spiritual healing or whatever on a daily basis. You know, the sun rises every day because the earth is rotating regularly and the moon circles. And there's an enormous amount of literature that scientists now are producing that talk about the various cycles in the universe. You know, how the entire solar system has this journey that it takes around inside the Milky Way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it takes 64 million years or something like that to make the circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sense in the universe of the regular patterns. The movement of stars and planets and solar systems and so forth. And by the same token, it helps us every day to do some part of whatever our routine is. So that's why I think it's important. A lot of people, for example, would not consider at all the idea that they would only bathe once a week, once every 2 weeks. You know, a lot of people bathe at least once a day, sometimes twice a day. But but how many people actually stop and say, well, every day I am going to pray, or I'm going to meditate, or I'm going to do, you know, my breathing exercises, or I'm going to do Tai Chi. So many of us are just hit and miss with our spiritual disciplines. And what I've tried to imply when I talked about the ascension, what I wanted people to understand is that you cannot remain in an ascended state if you do not do your spiritual disciplines, whatever they are.
Now, I understand that.
So in this work, what we do is we support your being, moving your center into a higher level. Say if in Christianity, you say into the kingdom of God. But you can't stay there, you know, if you don't pray, you don't talk to God, you know, you don't do whatever your spiritual disciplines
right.
are.
It's so a eventually discipline.
You have to do it. And it's not something you have to spend, you know, an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours doing. It's something that, you know, you can just simply say, God, please restore me to that healed state, or restore me to that cleared state, or restore my source of nation.
Mm-hmm.
And take a few moments.
I've done that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you keep going.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep going. I'm wanting to read some of the other literature out and this and that, yeah. So, it's,
I
do my meditations on a daily basis, yes. I'd probably meditate 4 times a day or more.
Really? That's, yeah, but it's a challenge with meditation. Because sometimes some people get so strongly aligned with the inner world that when they come out here, it's a challenge to have the kind of balance, you know, that they want. One of the things both in some of the Lightgiver dictations, the early ones, I don't know if you've gotten to those yet. The Lightgivers say to people, do not take notes. Do not try to remember what's on this page. You know, and that's so important at the outset. But then after a while, you'll find yourself getting material that may be familiar, slightly familiar, which is clearly the kind of thing you want to hang on to. But see, the situation is the mind requires mental food. And if the mind is not comfortable, shall we say, with the taste that is coming to you as an individual through your mental apparatus, if it's not comfortable, then it will block and challenge and interfere with your spiritual understanding.
Mm-hmm.
See, so the mind kind of gets in the way. So therefore, a lot of the written material which is coming through now, or that you may be starting to read in the Lightgiver work, is designed to give you frameworks that make even more sense as you move into even more deeply into higher reality. Now, I've noticed a lot of times when I've read works by, you know, spiritual beings and so forth, I say, boy, they keep saying the same stuff over and over again. And I'm listening to me talking, I'm saying the same thing over and over again. But the point is that there is this higher self called soul, as some will call it, which is
mm-hmm.
a thing, which is that aspect of ourselves that only can understand. Anytime we understand something, it is soul or the God self that understands. So you have to say, well, when you truly understand something, what does it mean? It almost means that what you understand is a part of you. It's like the air you breathe. Like your blood pulsing through your veins when you truly understand it. The rest of the time, most of us, and I'm in that too, most of us are able to replicate, we're able to copy, we're able to restate, we're able to regurgitate, we're able to say back what somebody else has said. So if I said to you, Susan, I want to tell you what kind of car I have, and you say to me, okay, Gregory, tell me what kind of car you have. And then I say, well, I have an ancient Toyota van. And you say to me, oh, you're telling me you have a Toyota van. Now, does that mean you understand that I have a Toyota van? No, it only means that you've been able to tell me basically what I told you.
Right.
Now, what would be the understanding? That's a rhetorical question. Say, if you want to say, but if you said to me, well, you know what? I have a Toyota van that's just like yours. And then I would say to you, oh, then you understand what it's like. It's almost as if to truly understand something, you almost have to understand it. You get it from the inside out.
Uh-huh.
You get it from the inside out.
Yes. Right.
Well, so when you get it from the inside out, interestingly enough, you feel such a compatibility. You know, it's not like your fellow travelers. You say, you understand that. Now, I'm going a step to move outside of that, to move even further than that. What it really means is that it's almost impossible to understand something simply because of words that are said or read.
Right.
It's possible to have a mental impression. You know, so you say to me, well, I live in a house and the outside of it is red. But do I really get it that it's red? And is it really that important that I get it? Probably not. But the point
is, all
I can do is just say, okay, your house is red. But if you said to me, if I said to you, well, you know what, I live in a red house. I know what it's like because people walk around by and say, why is your house red? Or they may say, what would possess you to paint your house red? So there's like a different dimension.
I'm laughing because I like red houses.
Oh, really? I don't know why.
I had my other house painted red.
No
barn
kidding.
Red.
No
that's
kidding.
That's why I'm laughing.
No, that's
yeah,
right. I don't know why I thought about a red house, but you know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, what's exquisite is when we move to dealing with spiritual reality. It becomes a case of understanding it from the inside out.
Correct.
Now, this process, so the light giver thing works backwards. Here's the way it works. We don't spend any time at all trying to tell you about, or very little, trying to tell you about the architecture of heaven. You know, we don't spend any time dealing with that. What we basically do is propose to you that you move through the process of sourcination.
Exactly.
Now, once you experience ascension, and then you look at the material, it makes more sense.
Oh, I understand that, yes.
And I don't mean just the light giver perception. I'm saying that when you are enlightened, which is what ascension is. When you are enlightened and you read material, you understand it.
When you experience it,
that's right.
It makes a lot more sense. You have to experience the steps leading up to sourcination and on up to God ascension?
Yeah, God ascension is the one that's there. Not a lot of people... I think
everybody's on a different level. I understand that a lot.
Yeah, I mean a lot of people. I think it's a concept. Just because, see, down through the ages, God ascension was an experience that was reserved for just a handful of folks.
Right.
So it'd be the guru, it'd be the master, you know, and their successors. And most people, the highest state of existence to which they might go would be Kingdom of God, Satori, Nirvana.
Right.
Jivan Mukti. So that's as far as it would go. So to even propose that there's a way that ordinary people like us can experience ourselves which transcends the Kingdom of Heaven, Satori, Nirvana, the Void, it's just off the hook. It's almost inconceivable. Because it's just not been out there. I mean, how many people, and you have a very broad background, you know, these kind of works. How many people...
Yes, I do.
Yeah, how many people have you come across who can say, okay, ascension. Now, I'm going to support you with ascension. And now I'm going to support you with God ascension. And now I'm going to support you with source ascension. People tell me that they just have... Huh?
Oh, I was going to say, I have met very few people in that realm.
Yeah, it's really phenomenal. And not only that, how many people actually say, well, yeah, this is, I can support you, but you know better than that. I can support your getting endowed with the same capacity that I have. And most of the time when people have this capacity, they use it to build their organizations, their ashrams, you know, to gain followers and students and so forth. But this work is set up to endow other people with the same capacity. You know, so people tell me, you know, it's a fairly unique thing. I mean, nobody's knocking down the door because we had these three webinars actually set up down in Tampa. And they were set up that people who want to take the webinars, and they're pretty reasonably priced, I think, could take them. And we're not getting, you know, any traffic at all. And I'm not complaining because it just would be more work for me.
Well, it's a lot of people, you know, that's not going to be their thing because they're not in the same, are not having the same experiences. A normal person is into the reality of Earth, and even churchgoers, I find, don't get it. To be honest, I've had some bad experiences in church because of what I see when I go, for one thing. But nevertheless, I have met a few people when I was living in Hawaii at the ashram. I attended the ashram quite a few times and have met different writers in that of spirituality. So, but here in a normal, I'm going to say the normal world, you know, it's more, they're living their lives, they're taking care of their kids, they're busy with the regular things in life that the average person does. Mm-hmm. But hopefully there's still hope that they would, at some point in their life or another life, they would go ahead and experience what you've experienced and other people with the knowledge that Earth is just not Earth. There's so much more to our temple and our very being, and people don't even realize how interconnected we really are. They just don't understand, don't get it, that every person is connected with other people more so than what they believe. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We're all tied in some way, and they just don't, they're not there yet. They're just not there yet. That's the only way I can put it. Because I know for myself, with my experiences, how interconnected through spirituality, through their God self, however you want to word it, through past lives, that we're all in the family and the close people with them are just more than one thing. We're all interconnected in many different ways. And if they saw that, the Earth would be a much, much better place to be.
Yeah. You know what, Susan, I promised that every one of these shows I would read a little bit from my book.
Yes.
Suddenly dawns on me. This is one that might be somewhat interest. Let's see. This is on page 14, What is the Natural Path of Healing? So let me just read a few words. The natural path of healing is quite similar to that of the evolution of the universe, in that the individual who administers the healing stands apart from the client and sees the client as a unit of the divine, whole and complete. Any blockage is unnatural and does not contribute to God's divine plan. Just as a boulder in a stream diverts the flow of water, so can a blockage prevent the gentle flow of divine healing through an individual or an energy point. It is not the task of the universal healer to divert the stream, but simply to loosen the boulder so that divine energy can continue in its intended direction. The universal healer lends the energy to the client of such intensity and power that the individual's own body performs the healing itself. How can it be an eruption of one's spiritual evolution when sufficient divine energy appears, whatever the source, and the individual's own body performs its own healing? Clearly, if the client is in such a state that the act of self-healing cannot be performed, then the universal healer may provide sufficient support to bring the client to the point that self-healing can occur. When the client reaches a state where self-healing can occur, the universal healer then teaches the client how to manage the self-healing process in terms of diet, nutrition, herbs, exercise, and lifestyle. The energy healing is but a small part of the client's self-healing plans. Thus, the universal healer sees the client from the soul perspective, well outside the worlds of karma and reincarnation. From that perspective, negative energy does not exist. Energy or vibrations that are disharmonious may simply be transferred elsewhere, much as a musician might be moved to another part of the orchestra. What are the different categories of healing? There are four categories of healing that are available to humanity: body or physical healers, psychic healers, soul healers, and universal healers. The universal healer works with the consciousness and power of the universe, so all of the forces are at his disposal. Nevertheless, he must be judicious in his application out of respect for the way in which the universe operates and the need to keep balance. Each category corresponds to the area or domain of the person receiving attention and to a plane or level of the universe. These also correlate to the spiritual location of the healer within the universe as well. Each level of healing has its implications for both the spiritual development of the client and the duration of the healing. There are the psychic planes, to which all things are linked by the causality of karma and reincarnation. These are the planes in which the body and psychic healers work. Soul healers work from the soul plane, and they take care to ensure that the healing done is in alignment with soul's plans for the individual's development. Then there are the universal healers who work directly out of the heart of God and may rework, if they choose, the individual's fate in order to bring the individual into complete alignment with his divine purpose. The universal healer is able to work with all higher beings in all universes throughout and beyond creation for a single purpose: to bring individuals' souls into the light and sound of God. So that's where I think I'll stop in terms of the material that's here. Mm-hmm. And what I'm realizing, having, you know, been a universal healer for a while, now that I've begun to become acquainted with what those in some of the more fundamental religions call anointing, that much of what's described here in terms of description of universal healers also seems to be quite similar to what happens with the universal healer. So I'm realizing that it's almost like there are the energy workers of the universal healers, and then there are the anointed evangelists and ministers who also do the same kind of work universal healers do. Now, universal healers tend to work with clients, whereby what I've seen is a lot of these anointings that occur seem to occur largely within a context of the church. I'm sure that evangelists... Patricia will probably correct me the next time that she and I chat about the topic. But anyway, look, Susan, I'm really glad that you called in, and thank you so much for being my most loyal listener. And we're going to end this by listening to the song by Hugh Masekela, Grazing the Grass. Now, this show is not going to be on next week. I will be traveling. And it just complicates too much to try to do this while I'm driving. So we will not be on the air next week, but we will be on after that. So take care, and thanks for listening.
Bless you.
Thank you. Bye now.